And we are here live in the Gorilla Camp, located deep in the heart of rural northern North Carolina. This is the 100th episode of Radio Contra. And man, it is really an honor, not just to be with you this evening, but to have shared as many episodes. I think in total, we've had 131 episodes counting Sons of Liberty live shows and a couple others that were out there. I know last Thanksgiving, I'd done a real quick live show and there was some test audio in there as well. But with that said, 100... relevant information, usable information that can off of in your lives. Whatever that is, personal defense, whatever it is, I've been seeking to give you the very, very best in earnest. And with that said, this year it doesn't happen for free. Okay, it doesn't happen for free. It is pretty expensive to do and time consuming on my end. So, our podcast supporters, I highly, highly encourage you to use. They are putting their money where their mouth is. They are supporting the podcast. They support AmericanPartisan.org. Please go out and support them. At the top of the list, Civil Defense Manual, Jack Lawson. Two volumes. I wrote the communications chapter in it. A lot of great authors in there, as well as original content on his part. Folks, I have both of these books, and I'm telling you, for the times that we are approaching and some of the things that we are looking at coming down the pipe, some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about in tonight's episode, this manual is a great starting point, okay? It is two volumes, volume one, volume two, and I strongly encourage you, if you are considering your general preparedness at all, please, you owe it to yourself, you owe it to your family, you owe it to your community, your suburban neighborhood, the cul-de-sac you're living on, wherever it is you're at, okay, all the way down to Dirt Nasty's trailer park. and that's a little inside joke for all the people that are over on the forum, forum.brushbeater.org, one of our esteemed users over there. We'd love to pick on him. But anyhow, this book, in all seriousness, this book is a big step up. It is a how-to guide, okay, on a large number of preparedness tasks, chief among them, security, okay? If you don't have security and you really don't know how to put that in place, well, because there is a right way and a wrong way to do it. And usually when people don't have a clue, they figure out how to do it through painful means. Okay. So you don't want to be that guy. Okay. You don't want to be that guy. Read this book and it'll get you up to speed quick, fast, and in a hurry. I can tell you from my chapter, from the communications chapter, It was written completely for the layperson. I kept the technical information to a minimum so that anybody could pick this up, digest it, and turn it into something usable. Okay. Next up, Henry Goods. Okay. Henry Goods, good Christian company, t-shirts, patches, logo gear out there for the armed and prepared Christian. Go check them out. Okay. Go check them out. Buy some stuff. I've got a few of their goods and great company. What a great company. What a great company. Palmetto State Armory. Palmetto State Armory right now, they should need no introduction. They were our original advertiser going all the way back to the original early days back in 2018 of AmericanPartners.org. Palmetto State Armory has got their Black Friday sales going on right now. I saw F3, which I've got a GF3 AK sitting over here. Got many thousands of rounds out of it now. It's been training rifle. They bought an ammunition factory in Eastern Europe and are bringing it to the United States. And it's tip to tail primers, casings, powder, projectiles. Ammunition plant in. They are making mags in-house. I have got a handful of these they sent out with one of these AK-104s that I've been testing. I talked some of the best mags on the market, period. Tested it right beside a Bulgarian Circle 10, which is kind of recognized as the top tier creme de la creme of AK mags. And, you know, I was a big investor in Circle 10 mags back in the day because I've been an AK shooter for a long time. These are every bit 100% on par with those. I know there's going to be some long time AK shooters. So Palmetto State Armory, make sure by the way that you click that link down below, because when you click the link down below, very time consuming, and you know, if the podcasts are of value to you and you're getting something out of it, partisan.org as well. All the banners that are up there, make sure you click on those and you will be supporting us. You'll be supporting this podcast. You'll be supporting all of my friends that are over there writing all the operations that we have going on, because it is not cheap and the cost of doing this is increasing by the month. So with the 100th episode, I am also introducing a new patron program. We have a patron program. There is a link if you would like to donate to it. It is a monthly donation program, and it is, I'm going to have a link to it up down in the show notes, but there is also going to be a link in the sidebar of this podcast homepage. It should be up now. For $1 a month, you are going to be supporting one of the biggest and best podcasts. And when I say biggest, I mean fastest growing. Okay. In news commentary, according to Podbean, our native host, we are right behind Dinesh D'Souza in news commentary. We are beating out Dr. Michael Savage, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, two incredible guys, by the way, people that I look up to. We are ranked right up there with some of the most well-known national radio show hosts. This podcast is right up there with them. So I'm really, really blown away by that. And I get a lot of internal emails that come from Podbean just from their analytics. And they're really, really impressed. That is 100% on this audience, folks. 100% on you. Best audience in the world, seriously. And if you enjoy this podcast, if you get something out of this podcast and the information and knowledge that is being shared here, please consider donating just a little bit, a dollar at a time, $5, got a couple of levels up there. It's going to go to cover all of the costs, the expense, and the time consuming process that this takes up to try and get that content cranked out to all of you out there. I really appreciate it personally, and I'm going to have some incentives as well that are going to be coming out a little bit later in the year, maybe early in 2022, that I think a lot of you are going to really like out there as well. But anyhow, click the link down below. I would really appreciate it. Recapping a few things, something that I found pretty hilarious just a little while ago, and this is why I wish that I had a news alert button over here and had a way of doing that. But Joy Reid, I mentioned her on a podcast last night. Of course, she needs no introduction as the venom spewer emeritus of such topics as critical race theory, out there spewing her venom and her, you know, vitriol at anyone that she deems not worthy. But anyhow, her ratings have really, really taken a nosedive. And I was looking, somebody sent me over a chart of her ratings. This show officially beats her in daily consumers, meaning listeners combined with downloads together as opposed to viewership. So just think about that. This podcast has been on the air, been hosted on this platform for just under 1 year. And we're already beating a major TV news presentation that has millions, if not tens of millions of dollars in production behind it. Just think about that. And that's all on you. That's all on this wonderful audience out there. This just incredible crowd of great Americans who are listening to this podcast, who are sharing this podcast. And, you know, and the other thing is that we did this with absolutely no outside promotion whatsoever, no advertising, no trying to inflate the numbers, no ad campaigns, none of that, right? It was all word of mouth. It's all word of mouth because if the content is good, you're going to hear it. If the content is worth listening to, you're going to listen to it. And if it's worth taking away and utilizing, you're going to do that. And so far, you have. You know, as we like to say, when the free market speaks, and it has spoken in volumes. So yeah, with that said, I am joined tonight by my very good friend, a partner in crime, a former active duty Marine and medicine man extraordinaire, Mech Medic. What is up, brother?
What's going on, man? What's going on?
You've been sitting there patiently awaiting me to plow my way through the intro. But it's 100th episode, man. Bills. You got to do something. It's the 100th episode. You gotta beat that chest a little bit. You gotta flex on a little bit. You know, 100th episode doing this, and our ratings are beating Joy Reid. You know, that's you know, and when you see that Diamond Skull resistor up there right behind. You know, Dinesh D'Souza, who has contributed amazing. I mean, this guy has done some amazing work out there. You know, he was before the January 6th political prisoners, he was a political prisoner. They put Dinesh D'Souza in prison for not claiming like two things on his taxes. I mean, you know, he made that Obama movie, and immediately, I mean, it was immediate. You know, I mean, come on, man. But to be right up there, to be ranked right up there with him, that's like, man, damn. Wow.
It's impressive.
Well, I attribute all of it to you and Johnny Paratrooper and on Sons of Liberty. That's and I'm dead serious about that. Some of our most highly downloaded episodes are Sons of Liberty. So that's, you know, it has kind of a impressive following on it all to its own, you know, so it's good stuff. And by the way, we will be having an episode of Sons of Liberty tomorrow night, folks, tomorrow night. You're like, how about that? But anyway, you know, all joking aside, you know, we're still learning more and more, dead serious topic here. We're learning more and more about, this incident in Waukesha, the terrorist incident. The media is not wanting to call it a terrorist incident. The police chief up there was very quick to say this is not a terrorist incident. And something I said, I pointed this out on the show that I did last night, is that they're going to carry the water for this guy, and the media is already out there doing it. Sadly was not disappointed in exactly the spin that I have seen on this, and it is absolutely shameful. But ABC News, I had to write this down in the notes because I saw this earlier today. ABC News put up a blurb saying, and I saw this in passing because I've been out splitting wood all day and stacking wood because it's really cold here in North Carolina right now. The low is 20 tonight here, so it's cold. But it's a little early in the winter for it to get that cold just yet. This is more of a late December, early January kind of deal. But anyhow, I know some of you guys, you know, Minnesota and Wyoming and Montana, y'all are like, that's summertime for us. but in all seriousness, I said last night that they were going to carry the water for this guy. They were going to sit there, and when you look at coverage of some of these other incidents, and you look at coverage of this, this guy, literally what he did was absolutely indefensible. But I said they're going to figure out a way to do it, and they did. They get out there, and they immediately say, oh, well, he was fleeing the police. He was fleeing the police. Right? What they're looking for, and this is absolutely shameful, what they have done here. What they're doing is trying to figure out, like, they know that they can't whitewash this. They know that they can't drop this from the news cycle and just turn your attention away and then it becomes a non-event. They know that they can't do that, right? But they're going to say, well, they're basically, it's a race to the bottom. What's the least horrible thing that they can say? Oh, well, he was running from the police. See, what that accomplishes to a propagandist is that now the narrative is that he was running from the police and they shouldn't have been chasing him anyway, because it's been long since been a talking point of the left. Oh, police chases end up, you know, killing people or risking. So, well, why is the guy running from him? Why is he running from him? Okay, you know, you don't just get into a high-speed chase for no reason, right? That doesn't occur. Okay, so that factoid aside, that's what they're out there saying. They say, oh, but he was running from the police. Well, that story's bullshit. Okay, it's bullshit, top to bottom, and I'll tell you why. I want you to remember back to the video when the incident first happened, when they had his red Ford Escape drive by. It zooms by. Right. And they played that over and over and over again. Right. You following me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
OK. So when that happened, you might need to pull this video up. You might need to pull this up to see exactly what I'm talking about. But
is it the one where he drives past the little girl?
Yep. So
that gives me fucking chills.
Oh, I bet. But this, so he goes speeding past the flag girls. There's a cop standing there in the background. And he turns, he sees it, he turns his head, and he takes off running. I have one of those eidetic memories, okay? It actually used to be better than it is now. I've had some TBIs and whatnot. But what I will tell you is that when I see images like that, engrams is a technical term for it, they get burned into my memory. That's what he was doing. If you go back and you look that video up, you'll see what I'm talking about. If that was a high-speed chase, all right, so think back to every public event ever, parade, march, demonstration, whatever the hell, right? They have police-manned barricades. Okay, they have signs up, the roads are blocked off, and if there was a high-speed chase, I am somewhat familiar with police protocol and, I don't know, policy letters that are written by the chief law enforcement officer of an agency. I know a little bit about these things. If there was a chase, if there was a quote-unquote chase that was coming into that area, why weren't all of those units that were there securing that area? Why were all of them not on high alert, actively trying to get the crowd out of the street? Why did this one cop, he blows this whole narrative out of the water. Why does this one cop just all of a sudden, what the fuck, did his radio just not work? The hell? No, this is a lie. Okay, this is a lie. Whoever came up with this bullshit story from ABC News, NBC News, which NBC News is I would say may not be around much longer, because if Nicholas Sandman can get $250 million, $250 million out of that for defamation, just with nothing else. He just got into a staring contest with a commie activist, all right, and they smeared him. NBC engaged in jury intimidation, not only character assassination but jury intimidation. I mean, they
that's a felony.
That, yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, and in a civil case, all you need is a preponderance of evidence.
Yep.
To gain a conviction there. So, if I were an executive at Comcast or NBC Universal, I would be finding a new line of employment right now. And every one of those little dipshits that are working there, Chris Hayes with your stupid little glasses and your little sweater, think you're so fucking smart, right? Yeah. Joy Reid, I bet you'll find a job working with Stacey Abrams or something, right? It's probably where you'll head next. Because I'll tell you what, with these people, though, it'll always be somebody else's fault, right? I bet AOC's campaign will probably hire you as a PR person or something. I don't know. But anyway, I'll get off of that because we're doing good, man. We're doing good. I don't want to get kicked off of Podbean afterward.
Look,
if then I get an email. We're doing so good. Get an email and they're like, "You've been canceled." it's all good. But anyway, with that said, getting back to the whole narrative about the police. If there was a high speed chase, right? Because we know this guy that just plowed into these people, and I'm not going to give this man the dignity of mentioning his name on this podcast. He shall remain nameless. If you want to know exactly who he is, you can look him up, right? But he had just run over the mother of his child with the same vehicle. I mean, what a guy! What a guy! You know?
And then released on $1,000 bail.
Yep. Attempted vehicular homicide. Bail. Yep. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Whoever released him, whoever that magistrate was, or that judge that authorized that release, needs to be debarred immediately. Not just fired, but debarred. You should never work in the criminal justice system again. And the prosecutor that allowed for this should be gone as well. You should be gone, because it's high time that we begin holding these public officials accountable to things. When you screw up at your job anywhere else, you get fired. And I would say it's a pretty big screw up. And not only that, the city, the municipality itself is going to get one hell of a civil lawsuit out of this, out of those victims. Because they are liable for this. They did not secure that area. If it was a high-speed chase, and this police chief making a statement like that, if such a statement was made, hideously irresponsible. Absolutely hideously irresponsible. And he should be fired on the spot as well. But it shouldn't even come to that. If you screw up that bad, you should step down. Period.
Yeah.
And you say, yeah, hey, we messed up here. All right. It's time to go. Right. That's the way things are supposed to work. That's why the Japanese had the tradition of seppuku. If you fuck up that bad, well, fall on your sword, because there has to be some sort of recompense here. There has to be some sort of recognition and social control that the buck stops with you. I screwed up, therefore this is what is going to happen here. And the propagandists, the propagandists are what they are. But anyway, so that is kind of my segue into what I wanted to talk about tonight. So MechMedic teaches, Stuck Pig Medical teaches a series of courses. He's got the TC3 course and Partisan Lifesaver. He's going to have Partisan Lifesaver coming up here in North Carolina, just right around the corner in December, correct?
Yeah, the 10th to the 12th.
So it's a 3-day course, 10th through the 12th. It is very hands-on. You're going to be out in the field dealing with different forms of simulated trauma and learning those emergency medical skills, which would have come in handy for all of the people in this mass casualty incident, would it not?
Yeah. One thing I did want to talk about is that there was a unconfirmed report kind of trolling around the internet, not trolling, kind of floating around the internet that I saw from a registered nurse that apparently worked at the emergency department at the Waukesha Memorial Hospital that was on shift during that attack.
Yeah.
And said that there was, this person alone helped treat 16 casualties of differing ages and acuity from the attack. Two of them presented with open femur fractures and laceration of the femoral artery. Both lived thanks to a prepared civilian and a police officer who were carrying tourniquets and able to apply them quickly and effectively. The civilian used a cap while the Leo used a soft T, both of which achieved hemostasis.
You know, no better pitch for why you should have a cat tourniquet on you at all times. You should have it at all times. It's not – if you're carrying a firearm, okay, if you're carrying a firearm, MacMedic and I both carry Glock 19s on a daily basis. I will never forget the first time, brother, when you came up, had a Glock 19. It was like, my man, that's right. appendix inside the waistband. But you know, if you're carrying a firearm and you are taking your life, liberty, and the safety of yourself and others into your hands, right? Because that is why we are armed. That is why, personally, that is why I carry a firearm. Okay. Is I'm not so much worried about me. I have that alpha type personality, as does MechMedic, where we run to the sound of gunfire. We've been there. We've done that, right? And we train others to do the same. But simultaneously to that, you know, we also don't run around starting fights, right? You don't do that. We are reactionary in nature because that's just the nature of the beast, right? And if you're going to be carrying a firearm, you better have a way. You better doggone have a way to stop the bleeding. And it's not enough just to carry a tourniquet. You got to be out there training. MacMedic.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I agree 100%. I always have at least a tourniquet and something to pack with that might not necessarily always be gauze. I try to keep a triangle bandage on me at all times, and in a pinch I can use that to pack. But I generally have, and if you've been to any of my classes, you've seen that I generally have at least something else on my person as well, more than just the tourniquet. But even just that alone, I mean, with, you know, over 40 plus injuries or injured people, plus the now 6 dead, just that on you alone isn't necessarily enough in a situation like that. And it kind of goes back to my roundabout answer anytime anybody asks me, like, oh, what should I pack for this? What should I pack for this? Like, how should I pack a car kit versus, like, if I'm going to handle like a group of a couple guys out in the woods? It's like, well, what are you doing and what do you expect to see? And you kind of have to use that frame of reference to pack around. So like normally day to day, like going out to like get groceries, like I'm not expecting, and understandably so, not expecting a terror attack to happen. It's just not the world that we live in yet, where that's something that I have to worry about in my day to day. But in a situation like if I were going to a parade like that, maybe you might want to plus up. And I'm not saying walk around with an aid bag like it's Fallujah. But if you have a child that warrants a diaper bag, you can carry quite a bit of stuff inside that diaper bag in addition to all of the diaper accoutrements. I know from personal experience. And even just a nondescript just plain black backpack that, you know, you can find at Walmart for $10. You can fit some stuff inside of that. You don't have to look weird or look out of place, to necessarily be prepared. I don't want people to think that you have to run around like in full kit to be able to handle these types of situations, because that's not realistic.
No.
And one of the other key points in that report from that nurse, said that due to EMS having difficulty initially assessing the scene, due to the panic crowd, the death toll would have at least doubled without individuals trained to stop the bleed and law enforcement transport of patients, which kind of basically mirrors what we saw out of the Boston bombing, that just with the amount of people and everything in that crowd in a downtown urban area, and I don't even know how big Waukesha is. It didn't look overly large, but big enough to have a decently sized police and fire response to that incident. It's not a small, tiny town. But it, you have that many people packed into that small of a space. It makes it really hard to get large vehicles in. It's very hard to disperse that many people to get sane ambulance in. So there were a lot of people that were carried, that were rolled in. I think there were a couple reports from Boston of people being rolled in wheelbarrows. To local hospitals, and that
talking
was one of the
about
big
the
things
Boston
that they attributed.
Bombing.
The Boston Marathon bombing. That was one of the big things that they attributed was, I mean, you look at, you know, go look at, you know, Google Maps of downtown Boston where those incidents happened, and look how many major level one trauma centers are surrounding downtown Boston. It's a lot, like almost double digits. And they kind of attributed that because when that happened, that was what, 2011, 2012?
Yeah. Yeah, it was
the whole tourniquet thing wasn't really that big. It wasn't as big as it is now. I mean, hell, that was almost 10 years ago, 9 years ago, when that happened.
Right.
And so the EMS carrying cats wasn't a thing like it is nowadays. Like even in rural EMS services, you can generally find something that resembles a COTSI recommended tourniquet, if it's not necessarily a COTSI one. And a lot of that has to do with those incidents having happened, but that doesn't mean that EMS is going to be there with any semblance of speed or urgency, not because they don't care, but because they simply might not be able to physically get into that area. And we have to kind of get rid of this notion that that first responders are going to be there to help us when we need them. We're going to have to be our own first responders because we don't know what's going to happen that's going to cause us to have to use these skills. I pray to God that no one ever has to use any of the skills that I've taught them. But if they do, I kind of have some pride knowing that I taught them the best information that we have at the time.
Right. No, it's the reality of the world that we're living in. You know, I mean, we don't, folks, we don't train people on what we do. One of the reasons that when I first met Mech Medic, we linked up through a mutual friend who is as solid as they come when it comes to just great people out there, just knowing great people. Yeah. And he is very well entwined with the preparedness scene here in North Carolina, and is an incredibly well-rounded individual himself in terms of skills and life experience and whatnot. And absolutely. And basically when he comes to me and he says, hey, you know, you need to check this guy out because I came across him, listened to him for a little while. He gave a presentation. This guy is solid. I always take that advice from this individual with the utmost priority. And so I invited you up for a class, and, you know, hey, I was blown away by the quality of the instruction, but your precision of how you instruct. But with that said, the thing is that your approach is a lot like mine. You do not look at this as it is strictly a business. You don't look at this as I'm going to check this box, teach you this skill and send you on your way. And you know, then I'm going to leave and count my money. Right. And hey, if there's guys out there that are doing that and that's your deal, I mean, I'm not putting any of that down, but what I am saying is that Mech Medic and I look at this like this is a calling. Okay, we're here to train you out there for incidents, unfortunately, like this one, and they are a reality. We are constantly reminded that evil exists in the world, and if you're going to stand in the gap, right, once more into the breach, dear friends, once more into the breach as we stack England's dead, right, to get a little Shakespearean there, you have to be prepared to handle these things. And just as you said, this death toll here, this death toll would have probably been substantially higher a decade ago from an incident like this. I mean, hell, just look at the truck incidents at the Christmas markets in Europe, which unfortunately I think we're heading to a cycle like that, because Antifa, John Brown Gun Club, these leftist groups absolutely hate Christians with a passion. They want you afraid, they want you terrorized, and they're going to attack your religious institutions. Okay, that is the way that they operate. That is the things that they do. Okay, that is the way that terrorists operate. They attack people in their religious institutions. And I'm telling you, we are headed towards that. These people are going to start doing it. You got to be prepared.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's weird seeing the correlations between, like you said, the stuff that happened in Nice, France, and then the attack that was in New York where the guy rented a fucking U-Haul. Which I think kind of just kind of ferments any, just kind of destroys any argument against the whole Second Amendment thing of where, like, oh, well, it's too easy to, you know, if it weren't for guns, these death tolls wouldn't be so terrible. This guy didn't even have to buy a fucking car. He rented one from U-Haul and drove through people in New York fucking city. Right. This guy had just been arrested November, released on bail, or no, it was arrested November 5th. For doing the exact same fucking thing to the mother of his child and released on $1,000 bail thanks to this fucking new age justice system that we have where the real criminals get let out because, oh, it's not your fault. The system is wrong and the system made you commit these crimes. And here he is doing it again.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say you scroll through the news reports and it's the Waukesha parade incident, all of these different, they just keep calling it an incident and tragedy and there's only one person that, or a few that will even call it attack. It's ridiculous. It's
an attack. And all you have to do is scroll through this idiot's Twitter feed, right? Because a quote unquote local rap artist, right? And social activists, they always drop that off too when they were describing his entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. He claimed he's a self-proclaimed social activist, right? And he's getting out there. He had a whole thread that was he had a tirade about the Rittenhouse verdict. Entire tirade about it, you know. And so it's just like I said last night. Where's the outrage there? Where's the outrage against Twitter? Where's the outrage against these blue check marks? Blue check mark, blue hair, pink hair, Megan Rapinoe looking people, brigade out there. These people who are absolutely unhinged, mentally in every single way, they're detached from reality. They live in an alternative dimension because they've never had to live in the real world. Heaven forbid that. Heaven forbid they ever have to turn a wrench or do anything to get their hands dirty, right? But they think they know every damn thing out there. Look at what they've created. They made a mess out of everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, the reality is that we have to live in that world. We have to live in that world. And our kids are going to have to live in the fallout of that world, too. And I know what comes next. Right, I know what comes next because they've been telegraphing this, folks. When the lava flows stop and the earthquakes stop, that's when you gotta be most concerned about that volcano. Okay, it's mm-hmm. getting ready to blow. They're not out there going crazy in the streets right now for the simple fact that it's cold. Okay. It's cold, and they knew that was only going to get them so far, right? There is a task and purpose on the lefty mission set out there. There's a task and purpose behind street demonstrations. They're past that, okay? They're past that on the extremism model, and it is a pyramid that they follow, right? I've talked about that pyramid, the insurgency pyramid. They're past that, All right. They're sliding into overt actions now. All right. So you need to be prepared for that. And medical training, folks, medical training. What Mechmatic just talked about with tourniquets, COTSI tourniquets, North American Rescue. Brother, you have put together, working with North American Rescue, which I've been blown away by the quality of this IFAC, individual first aid kit. Now let's talk about what that is. If you're a veteran, you know the term IFAC inside and out. It was that annoying pouch that you always had on your belt or on your kit, right, that had a few medical items in it. But you have made one, and working with North American Rescue, the top tier, right, top tier, tier one company out there making medical gear. This ain't no airsoft crap, right? I will not name names here, but this ain't no airsoft quality YouTube gun gear person tier stuff, right? This is real deal. You can stake your life on this and the lives of others, folks, and the lives of others. So, brother, talk the audience through what is in your IFAC and how they can secure one of those.
So the Stuck Pig Medical IFAC is something I'd been kind of wanting to put together for a while. I'd had a lot of people. I mean, hell, it was from the first class that we taught. I think it was like the second or third improve on the AAR was, you know, do you have anything to sell? Yeah. And I'd kind of been slowly trying to work my way towards that. And one of the big ones I wanted to do was putting together just kind of a one-stop thing. No, oh, go here for this, go here for that, go over here to this site for this thing, go over here. I just wanted it to be a one, you go to this one place and this has everything you need. No fluff, no filler, no fuss, no extra shit, no, oh, well, you need to add this one thing to it, which is kind of what I had seen across the board on kits that I had looked at. They either had too much or they were set up with the wrong mindset. Either looking at just plain civilian stuff with EMS, or they were meant for LE or military setup. And I just kind of wanted to set something for our specific community of partisans and with the environments that we might have to see ourselves in. I kind of wanted this as much as I could, all encompassing, kit. And, it's basically just got the bare minimum. You can always plus stuff up onto this, but this is the bare minimum of things that should go into an IFAC. And I basically took everything that was in my Army issued IFAC, plus or minus a couple of different things, changed a few things around, because I also wanted to keep the price point low. So like, instead of a hemostatic gauze and then a cotton gauze, it's just two packs of compressed gauze in there, instead of having to worry about that increased price. Because I mean, a thing of compressed gauze is what, $3-4, and pack of quick clot combat gauze is $45. That's a huge astronomical price increase. And does hemostatic gauze work really, really well? And does it work better than regular gauze? Yes, I will never try to hide that fact. I will never try to say that it doesn't, because it does work better than regular gauze. However, I don't know if it's necessarily 200% better than,
right,
or 20 times better than regular cotton gauze. That is right. A discussion I think that should be had, which is why I didn't bother including it. If you want to go find it and pay for it, by all means, go for it. I'm not going to be upset if you do. But for most people, I think they would be better off with just two packs of compressed gauze. So it's got that one cat. Combat application tourniquet. Everything that's in this kit is made by North American Rescue. And then it's got a emergency trauma dressing, or their version of an Israeli. So just a pressure bandage is all that is. A nasopharyngeal airway, which is just if you've heard anything about this, you might have heard like the term nose hose. It's just a piece of silicone tubing that goes inside your nose.
Also known as a fallout award. If you fall out, I knew a sergeant major back in the day that if you went on a brigade run, all the fallouts, all the ones that will fall out, they get that nose hose in there. That was known as a fallout award. And he would keep them. He would keep them. He kept them in his PT shorts too. So, oh, you know, got a little bit of that from under lube going on there too. But you were getting one. It was going in the nose because that's the reason you fell out, because you couldn't breathe. So he's going to help you breathe. But anyway, folks, with the NPA for maxillofacial injuries for people that have nose injuries, oral injuries, anything in the face, you know, and MechMedic is going to dive deeper into that in class, because there's an algorithm that we use, March, and the second one, massive bleeding, airway being the second one. You got to keep the airway open. And the way that you do that when you have a casualty who has, can't necessarily breathe on their own, or they're at risk of having their airway obstructed, you got to put that in there. So that is a very critical piece of an IFAC.
Yeah, absolutely. This one does come with lube, so you don't have to worry about getting any of that PT short gunk in there. it's got surgy lube. And then a chest seal. These are hyphens. These ones are vented. I have this question all the time. Oh, which one, vented, unvented? I really honestly, Kotze has kind of flip-flopped a couple of times on it. Not that they don't really know, but they're just trying to follow the evidence. And the evidence kind of, it's hard to really kind of nail this stuff down 100%. There's just still a lot that we don't know. So these ones are vented. One thing I will say about that is that vented eventually can become non-vented. So it's just something you're gonna have to keep an eye on. You can't just slap a vented chest seal on and just assume that everything is going to be fine. It really doesn't work like that. And it's a twin pack, because generally, at least with projectiles from firearms, if there's a hole going in, there's probably going to be a hole coming out. So you want at least two complete chest seals. Trauma shears, because that was something that was always missing from a lot of kits that I saw. So these are, and these are the damn good ones from NAR. They're really, really nice trauma shears that you can get from them. They've even got like a rubberized coating inside the handles. They're absolutely amazing. They work better than anything I've ever seen. We used them in class at the PLS course, instead of trying to use the kind of cheaper ones that you can get online that I had for training, that I was just using to cut gauze and stuff. No, we got those black ones out, and they were shredding those clothing to pieces, like a hot knife through butter.
Yep.
And the shears are really important.
The trauma shears are a critical piece of kit. If, you know, anybody in the audience goes back and looks at my AK-104 article that I put up earlier this week, you're going to see a couple of images in there. I talked a little bit about the AMD-65 as an AK variant. I'm going to do a separate episode just kind of talking about my experience with the AK and why it's awesome. But I've got a few pictures in there from Afghanistan, and one of the photos is of a good friend of mine who we were running a training range for the Afghans, and we were covering some of the same stuff that we do in the Fighting Carbine course, which I've got another one of those coming up in March. But anyhow, you know, this spring, and then I'll have another one later on in the year. But you will look, if you look carefully at his kit, you're going to see a set of North American Rescue trauma shears, and you're going to see it sandwiched in there behind his one of his utility pouches on his firing side to kind of keep it out of the way. But you know where it is. You can always index it, because trauma shears for all my vets in the audience that are listening to this, and you know, you guys know, trauma shears are probably going to be your first go-to after a pocket knife. So if I got a pocket knife, I need to do some basic cutting, cordage, or whatever it is, right? You'd be using a pocket knife for that. But for pretty much everything else, you're going to be utilizing those trauma shears, especially when it comes to exploring injuries. So, you know, people got clothing on. Let's say, like, let's go back to this mass casualty incident in Waukesha, right? So, you know, people are getting hit by cars. Well, it's winter time, or getting into the wintertime rather. And, you know, Waukesha, Wisconsin, it's getting pretty cold up there. People are going to be wearing a lot of layers of clothes. Well, you get hit by a car, you have to explore those injuries. Okay. You get run over by an SUV, by, you know, a 5,000-6,000 pound SUV. You have to now explore those injuries, and in order to do that, you can't just sit there and you know, look at the casualty and know what all is going on in there. You're going to have to start cutting clothing away, okay? And to get when you're applying tourniquets, okay, skin on skin is always the best. If you can't get that, then you can't get that. Then you just roll what you got. But if you can get down to the skin, that is always preferential, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That is preferred. The only time that I tell people not to worry about getting it on the skin is in that initial under fire phase. And that's the only time that we put tourniquets right over clothing. Anytime other than that, we're exposing to see exactly where the wound is.
Right. And care under fire, I mean, it's, you know, folks, for the uninitiated, and of course, MagMatic covers this in class, there are different phases to taking care of a casualty. And so, and kind of the anatomy, the crisis management behind a mass casualty incident like this, you have your initial responders, right? From varying levels of training. Okay. And, you know, they're what I was talking about last night. These are your popcorn eaters, right? They're sitting there watching the show, and all of a sudden, oh shit, something just happened. And now all of a sudden we're reacting to it. Right. So case in point, my first tour in Iraq, had a particularly bad day that day. And, got back to FOB Warrior, and FOB Warrior was the big FOB in Kirkuk. And this was the time that we were pushing out to the patrol bases. We had built all the patrol bases, and that was kind of the strategy in Iraq, right? Build these little castles in the sand all over the place. But we were still living part-time at Kirkuk. Or in Kirkuk at FOB Warrior. And so FOB Warrior is one of the big FOBs. Anyway, we had a pretty bad day. Came back, and it's getting close to midnight. They always have midnight chow, right? So chow halls are open at midnight. And I can't recall at that point the last time that I had eaten, but it was one of those deals where we're all just so everybody on the team is just so burned up mentally and blown out. You're just like, let's just go get chow. Like that's really all we can do. And, we do. And so, we're coming out of the chow hall and hear a rocket coming in. See the tail coming off of it. And the cache, the combat surgical hospital, which would later become Roll One, and for my Afghan vets, you know, you guys know Roll One, Roll Two, Roll Three, so on and so forth. But back in those days, they were called caches, and it hit right in front of the cache, and there was this Air Force girl that was standing out there and blew her up, and. Fortunately, she survived her injuries to my knowledge, but we run over there. Of course, you know, the rocket attack sirens, all that crap's going off. And I mean, whatever, like on that day at that point, you know, like that was the least of anything I gave a shit about at that point. You know, and so we run over there, but this young lady, she had lost her right leg. She had catastrophic damage to her right leg. She had significant amount of damage to her left leg from the rocket impact and her proximity to it. And we put the tourniquet on her. And she's right in front of the hospital, by the way. She's right in front of the hospital. And this combat hospital had dealt with a lot of amputations. Okay. And believe me, in that time frame of Iraq and in that particular area, believe me, there was a lot. And, you know, put the tourniquet on and you know, none of the hospital staff, because they're all taking cover in there, right? Because the rocket just hit. Hey, I get it. You know, I get it. But, you know, drug this young lady back into the front door after we gave her that emergency triage and did the best that we could. To my knowledge, she survived the injuries. Now, you apply something similar, right? We did the best that we could, care under fire. Okay, that's care under fire. You do the best that you can with somebody. You're not running through and giving them a full body diagnostic and figuring out all the little things, right? You are going to secure the scene first, right? The security of the scene, triage the casualty as best you can, stopping the massive hemorrhage first, right? That's M, and then making sure the airway is open. And if you do those two things with a casualty, right? If you do those two things, they have a much higher percentage of surviving their injuries. Magmedic.
No, absolutely. That initial triage and figuring out what you have is by far one of the biggest things that you can do to improve the outlook of your casualties, especially when you have multiple in a situation that becomes what we define as a mass cal. And doctrinally, a mass cal is anything that overwhelms what you can handle. So it's a real fast and loose definition. It's not any specific number of casualties versus number of providers. It can simply be two casualties, depending on the level of training and the experience and equipment that you have on hand. All of those play into defining a mass cal. And I would say easily that this situation in Waukesha hits the nail on the head for a mass cal for what was present on hand when it started. That's 40 plus people, you know, almost 50 if you include the ones that died. That's a lot of casualties. That would overwhelm any Roll One for any Army unit. Would easily overwhelm that Roll One.
Well, and typically emergency departments, smaller emergency departments, so, you know, we're not talking about one of the big education hospitals or any of that, but most emergency departments have between 18 and 24 beds at a given time.
Yeah.
So when you have, so let's say you live in a smaller municipality that has a small community hospital, right? Their emergency department at any given time is 18 beds. Now we're going to say, like, you know, people go to the emergency room, they get the sniffles, a little sinus infection, or, you know, whatever it is, right? And they get put in there. But when you have a mass casualty incident, and all of a sudden, as an emergency services coordinator, which usually has career experience on the ground, I say usually, not in all cases, but usually, has career experience on the ground as an emergency responder. One of their critical tasks is being able to categorize the people who are going to get the care first, essentially. You know, in the Army, we do this. In Department of Defense, we do this based on urgent surgical, urgent, priority, and then routine. Right. And mm-hmm. and of course, then you also have expected, and expected basically means that they're dead on the scene. There's nothing that you can do for them at that point. Yeah. You know, somebody that's taken a massive amount of head trauma. You know, I've dealt with some casualties that we medevac that were expected. Did not call them up as expected because we worked our ass off to try and keep them alive. And mm-hmm. unfortunately could not. But you know, when you are dealing with a mass casualty incident, and here's the thing, folks, in getting training for this, in getting training in these skills, you know, what we're talking about here, comparing being overseas where every part of our planning process has some aspect of medevac or medical evacuation planned into it, right? And we carry enough gear to keep our people alive, and we have advanced medical training on the ground. You know, I did live tissue training, a couple iterations of that, a couple of different schools through the same organization, where we were doing live tissue training on the ground in preparation for operations overseas, right? We were doing that. For the civilian side, even in because everything is liability based, and how many of your average first responder units, your fire departments, your EMS stations, how many of them are prepared? And even mentally, how many of them do you think are prepared to see the stuff that they're going to see in mass casualty incidents?
It really depends on the locality. In the bigger locations, so like for example, like a city like Raleigh or Durham, Charlotte, Fayetteville, Jacksonville, something like that, those agencies have seen their fair share of injury, violence, death, those types of things. You start getting out to more of the rural areas, right? They're probably used to seeing death, but it's more often like really bad farm accidents every once in a couple years. And then more often than not, elderly members of the community passing on from whatever it is that caused them to pass on. That's like the death and injury that they're more familiar with. Nothing right. against rural EMS at all. That's just the simple facts of looking at like population size and crime rates and all those other things tied in.
This is a law of average.
The injury subsets. Yeah. The injury subsets that they're going to see are going to be a lot different from what someone in downtown Cary or downtown Raleigh would see. It's a lot different.
North Raleigh. You got to be specific. North Raleigh. What they'll see in North Raleigh is the same thing. You know,
it's just gotta be specific there.
Or Greensboro. I mean,
Chicago's even gotten so bad that the Navy has started sending some of its corpsmen there to get emergency medical training, working in ERs, like specifically their corpsmen.
One of the guys into
downtown Chicago.
One of the guys that I had in class, he was the one that put together class, out in that part of the country just a few weeks ago. He was a career paramedic in Cicero, which is a pretty shitty part of Chicago. Anybody from Chicago, when you mentioned Cicero, they're like, it's not quite Cabrini Green, but is bad. He has some stories. He had some serious stories, and seriously, but it is one thing, and I'll have to make a differentiation too, because it is one thing to see, you know, one-off injuries here and there, or even murders back and forth and stuff that normally, just from a response perspective, if you're talking about, you know, you're used to seeing like let's say that incident with Keisha, right? And it only hit like two people, right? The SUV only hit two people. Okay, well, that actually could happen in a lot of different places. And so while it's still bad, right? And you know, the malintent's still there and everything else, right? But putting all that aside, still at the same time, you're kind of, from an emergency management perspective, you're used to seeing things like that, so it's not that big of a deal. But now, all of a sudden, we're talking about between 40 and 50 people with varying degrees of injuries. You're going to quickly get overwhelmed. Whoever's in charge on the scene is now having to categorize those casualties, right, one by one. I'll be honest. I've worked some mass casualties overseas. In Afghanistan, we had a particularly large suicide bombing. And, you know, I won't go into too many details other than that, but we were overwhelmed. We were overwhelmed just by the sheer number of casualties from that. And it required a pretty sophisticated response to it on many levels, because the Afghans were obviously not prepared to deal with the fallout from that. And we were overwhelmed too, because we had, I'll have to go back and look at the specific number, because I wrote it down in one of my little green notebooks over here, my little green Write in the Rain records of knowledge. But it was over 80 casualties, and many, many of them did not make it, because it was a very large V bed. But, you know, still, with that being said, this is the world that we're getting towards, right? And so it underscores why you need to be trained. Okay. If you're out there and you've got a CCW and you're carrying a weapon and you're doing your duty as a responsible citizen, because that's the way that I look at it, is that if you are armed, you're a responsible citizen. Okay. You are taking your civic duty, your civic responsibility, and you are armed, and you are saying, I am taking responsibility for the world around me and the safety of others, right? When I do that, you know, you need to be doing the same thing with tourniquets. And as Mechmatic pointed out earlier in the show, having that tourniquet, those tourniquets and the application of tourniquets were the number one lifesaver out there. Number one. And I'm going to go out on a limb, but I bet I'm right. The Stop the Bleed course, which you've also taught, right? And building on to that, TC3, yes. Tactical Combat Casualty Care, Partisan Lifesaver course, makes any amount of training that you can get. If you are planning on poking holes, you better be planning on stopping the bleeding. All right. And so I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say that if those people had been well trained, probably there, I'm going to guess that there was probably some people that had a significant level of training. But what if it happened somewhere else where they didn't?
Yeah.
And so that underscores the whole thing. That's why you need it. That's why that you need to get out there and you need to get that training. So what are the dates in December, Partisan Lifesaver?
So the dates in December are 10th to the 12th. Give me a second. I'll get the other dates up here, because I've already got some classes for the first bit of next year scheduled. So yeah, 10th to the 12th December is a Partisan Lifesaver, 2022. I've already got four dates up so far, February 18th to 20, North Carolina. And then we got a TC3 in March, the 12th to the 13th. And then we have two more Partisan Lifesavers, one in April, 15th to the 17th. And then another one in June, 10th to the 12th. I am open for travel as well. I'm trying to work something out in, I think, May timeframe, but still working through some stuff there. But that's just what I've got on for now. So December 10th to 12th is the next one coming up, and there are spaces, and I've got plenty of IFACs still available just on this first run. And once those sell out, I'll do another order. Another thing I am working on with UW gear for their bleeder pouch. I am in talks with North American Rescue right now currently to get that all put together, and I should be putting the order in here soon for a bleeder kit that will go into his specific bleeder pouch. I am working on getting that put together. Once I have that order in, I'll have a more accurate price estimate. Right now, I think it's looking like $65 or $70 for those.
Outstanding.
I do have
and the, that's, I do have the that's going to come. That's going to come with the pouch or
no, that's just going to be a fill kit just for his bleeder pouch.
Just wanted to be specific because you're always going to get those questions. We're like, wait a minute. I thought I was going to get a pouch for this. No, this is the components that go into it. Now, they're going to fit specifically in UW Gear's bleeder pouch. And you could put it in a lot of other things as well. So, you know, kind of bring your pouch to the party if need be, if you need.
Yeah. That's what the for my IFAC, that's why. So the IFAC that I put together does not come with a pouch. It comes vacuum sealed. One of the cool things that I was really impressed with NAR is some of their other kits. The IFACs were still in their like cellophane wrapping inside of those vacuum sealed pouches. And specifically law enforcement departments were having their guys keep their kits for insurance reasons or whatever, fully still packaged. They weren't allowed to open them until they needed them. Well, then you have to open that, and then you have to open the pouch that your tourniquet is in before you can use it. Well, these ones, I don't know if it's something new that North American Rescue is doing or if they've been doing it for a little while now. The tourniquets are not... in their own wrapping inside the pouch. They're just inside the vacuum sealed pouch. So you could, in theory, throw it in a glove block and in a glove box or one of the door little holders that are on a lot of cars nowadays, or just throw it in a backpack or whatever if you wanted something complete. But they do not come with a pouch because there's 1.5 million IFAC pouches out there, and that's kind of a personal thing for someone to figure out. So I've just got the stuff for you to put inside of it.
There you go. There you go, folks. I can't underscore it enough. Even if all you're picking up is a tourniquet. Okay. Even if all you're picking up is a tourniquet, North American Rescue, MechMedic is on the up and up on the latest certifications on all of this gear, as well as the knowledge. He is a meticulous student of these details. I have sat through many of his courses now. There's a reason that he's hosting them up here in North Carolina as well. Not just because he lives here. My training facility that we have set up, that we have stood up here, I would love to see you out in class. I've sat through a number of his classes, the ones that he's hosted where I've actually been in town. And been able to sit in. I'm telling you, it is the best instruction, bar none. And I've been in a lot of classes, both DOD side, Department of Defense, and on the civilian side. And I'm telling you, you are getting the best instruction out there, period. Period. I've worked with a lot of people. I wouldn't have him on the show. I wouldn't basically grant him free rein to use the forum to write content up on American Partisan, which he's got some excellent articles, by the way, videos that are covering his IFAC and what goes into it as well. And I do not give that level of authorization to somebody who is not a consummate professional in what they do and who does not meet my standard of what we do. All right. Because we are professionals. We are professionals first and professionals always. So, you know, with that said, with all of the craziness that is going on in the world, underscoring the need for people to get that training and to take your training seriously, because I have a very real fear and a recognition that the time of using it may be coming to close at hand. So with that said, MechMedic, brother, you got anything that you want to pass on to the audience?
Nothing offhand. I think we've covered a good breadth of it. I will say I appreciate all of what you said. It really means a lot coming from you, man. I do appreciate that.
It's certainly earned.
But yeah, I got nothing else. Just, you know, plug in the dates. I've got classes. If you want to get me to travel, I'm willing to do that. I'm my 2022 calendar, besides the dates that I read out, is pretty much open. go ahead and email me, mechmedic@tutanota.com, and we'll see if we can get something put together in your area. I've been all over the U.S. so far.
yeah, yeah.
For classes, I've racked up some serious miles, and I'm not looking to quit anytime soon.
That's right. That's right. Anyhow, brother, it is always, always an honor to be linked up with you. Folks, I hope that if for nothing else, you've got something out of this podcast. You've got something out of the last 99 episodes before this one, leading up to this one from this podcast. Please like and share us everywhere. You can download this podcast, by the way. Of course, we have our native Podbean here, but you can download this podcast from literally anywhere that you get podcasts. We're everywhere. We are everywhere. Please like us, rate it 5 stars if you are over on Apple Podcasts. I would very, very much appreciate that. I saw that we had several ratings over there that were 5 stars. Very much appreciate that. Like us, leave a comment down below. I love interacting with the audience as well. I spend a good portion of my day every day answering emails, even if it is just simple attaboys getting past my way. I'm very, very honored to be able to interact with all of you out there, the audience. And with that said, I'm even more honored to interact with you in class, in person, sharing knowledge and great skills among some of the best Americans on God's green earth right now. Anyway, with that said, folks, get out there, do something positive. We're going to be on the air tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, Sons of Liberty Live. So it is going to be our Thanksgiving episode. And man, I can already tell that it is going to be quite the colorful episode. I know that I am personally looking forward to it very much. Very, very much. Please join us in the virtual Green Dragon Tavern. Real American Talk. Real American Talk is going to be happening there. Anyway, folks, I want you to go out there, and if you don't join us or don't know about it or whatever, I hope that you have a blessed Thanksgiving. Thank you for making 100 episodes of this possible with nearly 160,000 downloads coming in just behind, being ranked just behind some of the all-time greats in conservative news and in talk radio. It is a huge honor. But what I will say is, folks, we are just getting started. We are just getting started. And what we've done up until now pales in comparison to what we're going to be doing next. God bless all of you. Good night. And I'll talk to you real soon. This is NC Scout out.